It's something everyone encounters whenever they fill a prescription. The drug comes with lengthy instructions on how to take it, what it treats, and its side effects from dry skin to, well, death. Most folks barely give this information a glance. But what if you were prescribed two drugs? Pharmacists are supposed to be on the lookout for collisions between them, and they're supposed to tell you if they find them. But do they? Reporters from the Chicago Tribune set out to answer the question, and what they found should disturb you. Welcome to The Breakthrough, the podcast from ProPublica, where investigative reporters reveal how they nailed their biggest stories. I'm Charlie Ornstein. This week, my colleague Tracy Weber and I talked to reporters Sam Rowe and Ray Long, who along with Carissa King uncovered how often pharmacists failed to warn customers about potentially dangerous, even deadly interactions between the drugs they are prescribed.
I had a source of mine tell me that he had some evidence that there were two popular, commonly used prescription drugs that were interacting and harming people. And they started looking into that and did several weeks of research and started wondering, thinking, God, are there other drugs out there like this? Are there other drugs that people are taking that are interacting and potentially killing people, unbeknownst to anyone, unbeknownst to doctors or pharmacists or researchers? And so I thought, is there any way we can find those? Once we decided that drug interactions were a topic worth exploring, you know, pharmacies, they're the last line of defense in this issue. And no one really knew how well they were performing. You know, just about everyone goes to the pharmacy. We see them on every corner of America, it seems. How well are they really doing? We looked at the research and the data. There wasn't hardly anything out there. Instead of just throwing up our hands or saying, okay, well, no one really knows, we decided, well, let's find out. Let's create the data. Let's go out there and do this ourselves and figure this out.
So together with nationally known experts, the team at the Chicago Tribune started to design a test. Reporters would fan out and get real prescriptions filled for certain drugs known to be harmful when taken together. In doing so, they would collect data on how the pharmacy handled filling potentially dangerous combinations. But first, they had to choose the drugs they would use as part of the test.
The outside researchers, there were two people that we consulted with, Dan Malone at the University of Arizona and John Horn at the University of Washington. They're leading experts in drug interactions. And their primary advice to us was picking out the drug combinations. We're not pharmacists. We're not drug experts. We weren't entirely sure what drugs we wanted to test in the pharmacies, what to use. So we went to them and we consulted with them. We consulted with others, but we had an idea. In the end, the Tribune picked out the drugs. We were the ones that decided how many drug pairs we were going to use. We wanted to make sure there were no-brainers, that they were contraindicated. We wanted to make sure they were popular drugs, that we'd be able to find them at pharmacies, and, you know, drugs that people would normally take in their day-to-day lives.
After choosing the drugs, they needed the prescriptions, and they needed a doctor willing to write them. This piece of the puzzle could make or break the story. It also presented some potential ethical questions. So Sam called an old healthcare source for some advice.
I had a source here in town who's helped me quite a bit on stories on public health over the years. And I went to her and I talked to her about the other research we had done on drug interactions. And I said, do you know anybody that would be interested in this? And she did. And I sat down with him and explained that, you know, we were taking this great scientific approach to the story. And he was excited. He had geriatric patients. He knew firsthand the dangers of drug interactions. He saw, you know, how important this was. And he liked the idea. He was excited by it. We were all excited, and he was a great member of the team.
So you had a licensed physician writing prescriptions for people who weren't his patients and who didn't have the ailments the drugs are supposed to treat. Did you have to get permission from the state medical board? Did you have to get law enforcement clearance? These were sort of, in essence, sting operations, and I was really curious about how you dealt with those ethical issues.
No, I sort of disagree with her characterization of that. I mean, what we were doing here was scientific research. We were building off the work that we did in conjunction with Columbia University, where we were taking a different approach to journalism. That journalism isn't just about going out there and nailing the bad guy. It's about making discoveries. It's inventing new things. And here was a topic that it was an intractable problem, major public health problem, drug interactions, that nobody was able to fix and get to the bottom of. And we wanted to get to the bottom of that. And there was no other way to do this problem. There was no other way to address this issue. But, you know, we talked to our lawyers, we talked to our editors, we talked to researchers, we talked to scientists, we looked at the state statutes, and we talked to the doctor himself. And in the end, we're on solid ground. There's a precedent in this arena of scientists using standardized patients, for instance, or mystery shoppers. It's not any different than what the industry does itself or what social science researchers do.
But this type of reporting takes serious time and money. To convince their editors, the team decided not to send all of their mystery shoppers out right away.
I think they, like us, wanted to know what the likelihood would be that we would see large numbers of failures. As it started out, we thought that, you know, we didn't know what we would actually see, and we were curious to see what was going on, and we didn't get immediate, yeah, go out and test 255 of these. We went out kind of like a test pilot, wouldn't you agree, Sam, where we went out and did a few to find out what it looked like. When we saw the numbers were coming in with significant amount of failures, we kept expanding, and then we would go in steps, and we'd say, okay, let's try a few more, or, you know, 20 more or something like that, and then we would expand, and then we finally, we had determined that really to get the best type of numbers that would limit chance, that we would try to get 30 at each chain.
So the pilot had to be part of the overall study, and then the results started coming in. Obviously, we have the story there. Then we knew we were going to have to do a certain amount of tests to make it statistically significant.
How did you pick the pharmacies? And then did you coach people like, okay, here's what you do. You walk up and you do this. And then can you describe how the process went and how did you do all of this?
And we had a very strict, rigorous method that we designed and stuck to. And part of that was a data collection form. So once the reporters were going out, they were trained by the lead reporters, myself, Carissa, and Ray, on what to expect and what we were going to do. We wanted to make sure that every test was standardized as much as possible. And you'd be surprised, when you go to a pharmacy, there's not a lot of chit-chat. There's not a lot of things happening. It's sort of like going in to McDonald's and ordering a Big Mac, and you pay for it, and you walk away 15 minutes later. That's basically what's happening in a lot of pharmacies. That's not what should happen. I mean, the silence is them breaking the law. They should ask you questions about who you are and what other medications you're on, and they should offer to counsel you on new medications, and they're not doing that. But, you know, we're prepared for that. So while we were in there and when we presented these two prescriptions together, the reporters were taking notes, sometimes as this was happening, on their cell phones or contemporaneously, and then they would fill out the collection forms. They would bring it back to the office.
The team spent months crunching the data, and then it was time to talk to the pharmacies about what they'd found.
It seems like hundreds of calls to get to people. Sometimes you would call. I mean, we tried to call everybody back, but a lot of times the pharmacists had moved on, and so we weren't able to talk to all of them, and a lot of them would decline to talk. You know, it was one of those cases where they were saying that they weren't allowed to, or they didn't want to, but there were others and many who actually did talk to us quite candidly about it.
At the chains, oftentimes we'd talk to a few people, but then word would get out that we're calling the chains, and it would be kicked up to corporate, and then so the CVS corporate person would call us, and then we dealt with those folks at the corporate level. You know, I called a lot of those people back and said, well, you know, we really need to talk to you about this, and I'm willing to come out. And I went out to Woonsocket, Rhode Island, and sit down with the CVS people and spend all day out there.
Were they impressed with what you'd done?
I don't know if they were impressed, but they asked a lot of them questions, you know. I mean, it's not like there's a story in the paper, so we're going to spend all this time and effort, and we're going to retrain everyone and change all our systems and spend all this money. And no, I mean, no one's going to do something like that willy-nilly. So their first reaction was like, well, send me all your data. I want to see all the data. So I would send them everything, the prescription numbers, the passes, the fails, who went where, and everything. And then you're not just dealing with, you know, PR people. They're kicking that to their pharmacy teams. And, you know, you go to the big boys, and they've got all sorts of experienced people in the pharmacy industry. You know, they've been regulators. They've worked in industry. You know, these guys are experts. And so they scrutinize every single thing on our study. And so this was a months-long process. We put out those calls in late summer, and they weren't complete until December.
Ray and Sam heard all manner of excuses for why the pharmacist failed to warn customers. All told, they and their colleagues had visited 255 pharmacies in and around Chicago. More than half did not mention the potential interaction between the drugs they were picking up.
I think one thing that folks might not understand is that these interactions aren't just requiring the pharmacist to independently know. The machines are set up to flag these interactions. So can you tell me a little bit about, you know, what are they going to do to make sure that their pharmacists are paying attention to this?
Yes, they all have computer systems where they have a database. They're supposed to check to see if there's any interactions, but not just interactions, to see if the dosage is correct. It's not too high, it's not too low, whether it's duplicative, whether someone's on a similar drug. There's all sorts of ways that drugs can harm you.
Yeah, the workload, I think, is another piece of it. They have so much product coming in, so many prescriptions coming in, that they need to move quickly. And we talked to a head of a board of pharmacy out in New Hampshire who had studied why there may be drops in identifying some of the interactions out there. He hadn't gone to the extent that we had, but he had some internal records of two chains out there that he didn't identify. But he concluded that there was so much going on that the pharmacists were sometimes skipping the drug safety review, or at least not putting enough time into it. And so we talked to pharmacists who go through 200, 300 prescriptions a day and barely have time to do anything else, even take a break at times. We knew that speed was another element in this, and the size of the workload was another element in it.
It's important to remember that the pharmacists are supposed to check these interactions by law, and they're supposed to know what are the drugs you're on by law. That's their legal responsibility. It's just not a professional responsibility. And we found that they're just not doing that. I mean, that's a dirty secret in pharmacies across the country. You could find two prescriptions on the ground made out to somebody else and walk into a pharmacy and get them filled with no questions asked. That's really sad, because pharmacies are supposed to be this important cog in the healthcare industry, and they want to be looked upon as important, and yet they're behaving in many ways as glorified vending machines. And they're breaking the law to boot. In the course of closeout interviews with the chains, I mean, obviously I made that point, so they are making changes. They're changing the computer systems to make sure that the alerts that are fired off are going to be the important ones. They're retraining their pharmacists and technicians to warn on drug interactions like they're supposed to. For instance, at CVS, they won't have the option of pharmacist discretion. You hear that a lot in the business. Well, it's the doctor's discretion. It's the pharmacist's discretion. By law, they don't have that discretion, and so CVS is fixing that. If they see a dangerous drug interaction that come in, if you come in with a prescription or two or three, and there's something bad there that could harm you, they have to do one of two things. They have to tell you, they have to warn you, or they have to call your doctor and say, what's up with this? Do you want to keep this prescription? You want to change it? They can't just override the alert, or they can't say, oh, well, you know, I know that person, or that person looks healthy to me, and go on. So that's a huge change in the industry. The other thing they're going to do is they're going to have a more robust and transparent what's called offer to counsel. And you'll notice this. The next time you pick up a prescription, you'll notice this. The technician will say to you as you're checking out, do you have any questions today? Is there anything, you have any questions? Like, any questions, it could be like, do you want your parking validated, or do you know your way out of the store? They're trying to meet a legal obligation that they're supposed to, on every single prescription, tell the patient that this is a serious drug you're taking. There may be some interactions. There may be some side effects. We have a pharmacist here. Would you like the pharmacist to come out and talk to you? That's what they're supposed to do. That's not what they're doing. They're saying, any questions today? Or they sometimes don't say anything at all. CVS is changing that on every single prescription. And again, a billion prescriptions a year.
Well, that's a huge number of prescriptions. But what happens now? How can you be sure that the pharmacies are actually changing their practices?
We run a marathon, and then when we're done, we sit back and say, well, that's a problem that we fixed, and we go on to something else. And I think in a situation like this, and we'll have to sort of periodically check in on the industry to make sure they're doing what they promised to do. And luckily, we have a lot of sources in the pharmacy industry now because we called those people back, the people who passed tests and failed tests, and we've developed some relationships with some of them. We can call them, and we can say, hey, CVS promised they were going to do X, Y, and Z. Have they done that? And they can tell us. And so I think it'll be easy this year to stay on top of this issue. We weren't going out there and doing something that was, in the end, going to be superficial. We couldn't. If we wanted to affect change nationally, which we did, we got pharmacies to make tremendous safety steps. If we were going to do that, it had to be scientifically sound. It couldn't just be first-rate journalism. It had to be first-rate science.
Reporters don't always know what they're going to find when taking on such an overwhelming task. But they know that if they find what they suspect to be true, the impact that can come as a result makes the risk worth it. For more information about this episode and links to Sam, Ray, and Carissa's story, visit ProPublica.org/podcast.
You've been listening to The Breakthrough, the podcast from ProPublica, where investigative reporters reveal how they nailed their biggest stories. I am Kate Brown, and I am the producer of The Breakthrough. Our engineer is Tim Kramer. Our executive producer is Celeste LeCompte. This week, your hosts were Charlie Ornstein and Tracy Weber, and our music is by Mural and Tony. Next week on The Breakthrough, Annie Waldman talks to the former editor of Russian news organization, RBC, about how she revolutionized their newsroom and broke stories that led to retaliation from the Kremlin. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.